Hello and welcome to the ThoughtWorks Beacon podcast. I'm Prasanna Pensai.
I'm Neil Ford.
And I'm Johnny Leroy.
In this episode, we will discuss blockchain and how it differs from Bitcoin and what the future holds for blockchain.
All right. Thanks, Prasanna. So when people hear about blockchain, they inevitably think about Bitcoin because those two things are sort of intertwined in people's minds because Bitcoin is the first real public implementation of blockchain. And right now in the press, there's a lot of controversy around Bitcoin, both as a very volatile commodity like pork bellies or frozen concentrated orange juice, but also because there's a lot of infighting within the Bitcoin community. There are three proposals now about how to change Bitcoin, and I'll let you do some research on that and not bore you about that, because mostly what we're talking about here is blockchain. And I think Bitcoin is really just a good example of kind of the hubris of technologists, because a currency is a very complex thing. It is a technology, but it's also a lot of social constructs and political implications. And you can't divorce the technical aspects of a currency from all the other things that make currency work in a society. And the problems you're seeing with Bitcoin right now have absolutely nothing to do with the viability of blockchain as an algorithm, but has everything to do with all the non-technical aspects of currency and how messy that is in the real world. And to make cryptocurrencies work, we're going to have to solve both the technical and all the political problems. And so what I'm really doing here is divorcing Bitcoin from blockchain, because blockchain as a technology has some really fascinating and powerful applications, which is what this podcast is really about.
When you think about blockchain, I have a definition of blockchain which you may not have heard anywhere else. It is simply that blockchain is what you get if Git and Napster had a baby, which was then raised by its canned food and ammunition's uncle in rural Montana. Which, what that means essentially is that it's based, at the base is Merkle trees, which is what Git is made of. And so the technology of having a tree of hashes is something that's been around for a while and has been used in a lot of different things. And so that's the fundamental part about blockchain. On top of it, it is shared over a P2P network like Napster and allows for a lot of people to have the same version of the truth. And those are two things that make it really powerful. There are other things as well, but those are kind of the two things. The rural uncle in Montana is the idea that if you simply let all of this stuff be there and let everybody do whatever they want, and things will settle into an idyllic world. And that's simply not true. Blockchain will have to outgrow what her uncle in Montana has raised her to think and be much more accepting of things like regulations and understanding price stability and looking at, as Neil said, simple things like how do you get six human beings to agree on one course of action, let alone 8 billion. So I think there are a lot of things that are ahead for blockchain. But we definitely see that there is a tremendous amount of potential as to where this technology is going to go. And it's not something that is going to go away anytime soon. We think in several decades' time, it'll be something like TCP/IP. It's there. Nobody talks about it anymore, but it's there. It's ubiquitous. That's the kind of potential that we see blockchain having in the coming decades.
I've heard people say, and not trying to be, they weren't trying to be hyperbolic by saying that blockchain may be the most important internet protocol since email, because once we start using it, I mean, it's really, at its heart, it's distributed trust. And that's a really useful thing to have on something like the internet, is distributed trust that you can actually trust. Now, that's a powerful thing.
Right. And we were actually thinking about UUCP as an example of what blockchain is today. So when it started out, that's how you sent emails, when servers would dial into another server and then send the messages over. And so it was very a basic way of distributed messaging. But look where we've come in the last even 20 years since UUCP was a thing. So we see that sort of growth coming up for blockchain. So we want to talk about why are people so excited about blockchain? A lot of that is in the financial services world. People see a lot of different ways in which they can apply this. Two things that stand out are the claim that blockchain can cut $20 billion in costs across the financial services industry, specifically in settlements, whether it's post-trade settlements or like debit transaction settlements. The idea of preventing double spend is what ACH and SWIFT and all of these and clearinghouses do as their primary responsibility. Blockchain builds double spending prevention in. So that is the potential that people see in the financial industry.
Well, it's a good example of, yet again, internet technology is displacing middlemen, because that's really just a middleman in the financial services market, and they've been able to extract a lot of money by performing what is a valuable service now. But once you have technology in place, you don't need that service anymore. So just like travel agents, bankers may go the way of the dodo and become a very specialized field like travel agents are now. They're not gone, but now you have very specialized needs before you go to a travel agent. You don't go for mundane sort of travel details. You go to the web.
That's actually a very good example, because it's, I don't think we can say with certainty anyway, that all forms of intermediation will be gone forever. What we are saying is the current forms of intermediation will not be relevant anymore, and new forms of intermediation like Expedia or Travelocity or other means of buying tickets online will come up. And so there will be other new intermediaries replacing the old intermediaries. And we may see today's intermediaries just buy out the new intermediaries. You'll have the same logo, but in a sense, everything underneath it will be very different.
Well, and in fact, the intermediaries will be forced to add value, not just sit in the middle, but be forced to add value, which is a good thing.
The other area within the financial sector that people talk about a lot is payment networks and exchanges as something that are not necessary anymore, because you can just send money from New York to London or to Kampala and not really have to go through all the foreign exchange nonsense that you have to go through today. And that's a potential where, as Neil talked about, the hubris of technologists, where you can look at a technical solution and say, yeah, you can solve that problem. How do you deal with convincing Museveni in Uganda to allow foreign exchange to happen freely? Or how do you expect a country like Venezuela to not cap capital flight, not to prevent capital flight? Or in Greece.
Or China.
These are big problems that, while you have a technical problem, it's not something that you can just snap your fingers and say that you can now send your money anywhere in the world easily. They're a lot more complicated than that. Which brings us into the impact that this could have, that people are excited about, in terms of government. One thing that we see excitement in is actually from regulators. Regulators are excited about this because they get very interesting visibility into what the hell these people are doing. Because today they have to spend a lot of energy and a lot of money with people just probing log files after log files and trying to ask questions that they really don't think anybody should be asking, because people should follow the principle of the regulations in the first place. And they don't. And we see the number of fines in the financial industry and other industries coming up. You can probably subscribe to a newsletter that only tells you of the scandals that the financial industry and the fines that have been imposed upon them. And you'll probably get something every single day, and you'll add it to your spam folder. That's how many scandals happen in the financial industry today. And regulators are really excited about getting the kind of visibility that they can't get today with much less workforce, and they can actually have algorithms that alert them when they see fraudulent activity happening. That is something that's interesting, not just in the United States, but in the UK, in Singapore, in China, in Hong Kong, as well as Australia, that I've heard about, and probably other countries as well, where the regulators are asking the question about, hey, this thing looks scary today, but we see potential that this thing can actually help us in maintain the stability of markets and stability of governments, for that matter.
Yeah, auditability is something that you have to layer on to a physical currency, but it's actually built into cryptocurrencies and other sorts of distributed trust kinds of activities, like contracts and other things. So, I mean, the auditability is inherent in that use of blockchain. So that makes it very appealing in industries where transparency is something that you really aspire to.
And traders and other people in the financial industry start looking at what happens when all of these things, all of the assets start coming into a blockchain and are transparently visible. I think they're very excited today about the liquidity increase that will come from having more assets be tradable. That basically implies that you will see an increase in volume of trade, which means that the overall economies will grow and the financial industry stands to profit. So I think that's another area of excitement in the financial industry. With that said, what do we think about all of this stuff? And I think right now, our view is that the hype is greater than reality. There is a tremendous amount of potential, but we see an echo chamber outside. So if you read about 40 or 50 articles, I think I would say that they're probably making 2 points today, but they're just repeating it over and over and over again in new articles. And so that echo chamber exists, and the hype that people are talking about blockchain is greater than what is actually happening in reality today. And that's not to say that the future doesn't hold a lot of promise. It is simply that the excitement right now is overreaching. What that means, Gartner does something called a hype cycle. I don't think they've done a hype cycle for blockchain yet, but I'm sure they will soon. And we think at this point, we are sort of approaching the height of the hype cycle for blockchain. What that means is that you will see a period of what they call the trough of disillusionment coming up. And the reason for that is that the excitement about blockchain and the amount of money going into blockchain is coming in the form of investment. We don't really see a lot of revenue in a lot of these companies. And we're seeing some companies start to fold. And what happens with when that starts happening more and more is that people start losing faith in this idea, and then the hype cycle becomes negative and the media starts calling it a bust. So, and then once all of that heat and the cooling off is settled, then the real value starts showing up where, like, oh, wow, I can actually do this. This is actually better. This is actually something that helps the entire economy, for that matter. And then you start seeing another uptake again, and then you get into a more stable value of blockchain.
Yeah, I think this is the perfect example of the hype cycle, because it's such an interesting new way of applying technology that already exists. And of course, it's a way, you know, it's tied to money, so people got very, very excited about it. But I think you're right. We will see a lot of negative press in the near term future about it. But then it'll settle down, and the real potential of the algorithm, I think, and the techniques around blockchain will start to be realized, and people will pragmatically start using it for the things that it's best suited for. It's not a panacea in a way to solve every problem on Earth. And you see a lot of misapplications of blockchain now as a kind of pie-in-the-sky technology. We always try to look at technology as objectively as possible and try to find real applications for it. That's the interesting place we find ourselves now, is finding interesting ways to use this technology.
One of the areas where we find this to be quite interesting is, if you boil it down, as we said, it's essentially an immutable Merkle tree, which when used as a transaction ledger can have a tremendous amount of impact. When distributed publicly or P2P network, it can have a tremendous amount of impact. And someday, we will start seeing automatically triggered programmable contracts, what are called smart contracts today. They'll start living in the shared ledger and operating portions of our economy. We see that we can start moving into what we call an algorithm economy. But at the same time, a lot of the smart contract technology that exists today isn't quite there yet to fulfill all the potential that it can have in the future. So those are very interesting and exciting things that we see coming from a world with blockchain. But there are also some things that doesn't come with the blockchain, at least not inherently, that somebody needs to build on top of what exists today. There are about 5 things that we have that we think are challenging going forward. First is that there's no inherent, independent, non-volatile store of value. As soon as you get into putting more and more things on the blockchain and more cryptocurrencies and more tradable assets, you'll start seeing every commodity start behaving like a currency, which means that you have no sense of how things are going to move, how the value of one thing compared to another thing is going to move. And that creates a significant amount of volatility. And so when you store your money in this cryptocurrency, you don't know whether you cannot afford breakfast the next morning or whether you can buy a house with the same amount of money. So the volatility will be something that's challenging. And the other mechanisms that need to calm down that volatility need to be in place, things that what regulators and what we call middlemen today perform that role, and that role needs to be played. It may not be in the same form. It may be an algorithm that's doing this, but that role, somebody or something needs to play that role. Second one is that there's no inherent fraud protection. We talk about distributed trust quite a bit, and there's tremendous amount of potential for that, and we know the 51% problem. But there's other problems. Once you're not just transacting Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies and you're trading other forms of assets, cartels and other nefarious actors can actually bring prices of something down by flooding the market, or other ways of creating flash crashes or other things like that can happen in this kind of a world. And it's not, that doesn't inherently protect from all of that stuff. Somebody needs to do something to prevent that. The uncle in Montana thinks that this is going to help alleviate economic disparity, but it's not inherently going to do that. What we see is that it's really going to be easy for people who have a lot of money and capital to overpower a nascent blockchain economy, and unless there are other forces that are against that. This essentially means that we think that financial intermediation will change hands and become maybe more, but not be eliminated entirely. And lastly, a critical part about blockchain is managing private keys. That is not something that people know how to do. People write down their passwords. It's the same password for everything, but they write it down on a sticky in big bold letters, and it fits in a single line because it's only four characters long. And that's the world we live in today in terms of security. And to expect people, those same people, to now be good at keeping their private keys secret is challenging.
In fact, there are a lot of stories of people who have Bitcoin wallets on phones and then leave them on airplanes and not realize that that's the only store they have of their money, and that that money has now disappeared because that phone is no longer in their possession. So people are going to have to learn about a whole new level of security and a hygiene around these technologies.
So that makes a widespread adoption of all this stuff challenging, to say the least. So all of that usability needs to be built in, which goes back to our point that new intermediaries will arise who will make this a lot easier, will add that value for people to play in this world. So the last thing I wanted to say was around what should a company do right now. And we think that the technology underlying blockchain, specifically the Merkle trees, making them immutable and then potentially even distributing them over a P2P network, are things that are solid that we can use today. There's no reason to wait. If the application is the right kind of application, that's where some of the challenges begin. So getting the business side of the house and the technology side of the house, experimenting with blockchain and understanding what it does and starting to see the world through the lens of blockchain will be, I think, the important first step for a lot of companies to take right now. And if you don't have this happening in your company, you should start it right away. I think that's the number one thing that I'll say should happen today.
And this is Johnny Leroy here. I think that's a really interesting point. We're seeing a huge amount of companies and organizations coming to us or asking how might they use blockchain? What categories of problems could blockchain technologies or related technologies solve for them? And we're very interested inside financial services and beyond. We're seeing interesting experiments in the Internet of Things around how do connected devices talk to each other. There's been some interesting experiments on top of Ethereum in that area. There are other areas, whether it's voting in Ukraine, where people are exploring with how can we apply blockchain to societal or corporate or technological problems. Another area is around these distributed autonomous organizations or corporations built on top of smart contracts. And there's an interesting thread of thoughts that with the growth of intelligent agents, whether they just be online agents like a Siri or self-driving cars, might be able to become their own autonomous organization, having their own rights and their own assets. So we can lead it into a sort of really interesting sci-fi world. But I think what we're seeing is that while a lot of these questions are interesting, people saying, how might we use blockchain? What types of problems could be solved with blockchain? It's a really good question to ask, but the answer isn't always blockchain. So this is why today we've been trying to peel back what are some of the underlying technologies and understand what's the use case you're in. Really, for blockchain to make sense, you need a wide, broad community with a diversity of incentives and interests. You need to be open to having public transactions and have no trusted third party there. So if all those things are in place, then looking at blockchain itself makes a lot of sense. But following the question of how could we get rid of intermediaries, how could we create some levels of trust in untrusted ecosystems, is a really important conversation to explore. But sometimes you might end up with a simpler technology like a Merkle tree or some other append-only log with some level of verification.
Or just Postgres.
Yes, sure. And so for me, really, blockchain on how might we use blockchain is a really interesting question, but blockchain isn't always the answer. Thanks for listening to the ThoughtWorks Beacon podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @ThoughtWorks. And for more information on ThoughtWorks and our podcasts, visit ThoughtWorks.com. And also, please rate us on iTunes.